Following are comments on John Webster's The Duchess of Malfi, Act 2. Act 2, Scene 1. I have bought some apricots, the first our spring yields. After a darkly comic conversation with an old lady, Bozola unfolds his device for determining the cause of the Duchess's weight gain and change in dress. In Act 2, Scene 1, Bozola assails an old lady on the issue of her face painting, her makeup regimen. This is seemingly a common theme in early modern plays, and we may recall Hamlet's remark about a lady trying to use makeup to banish the thought of death. Quote unquote, "Now get you to my lady's table and tell her, let her paint an inch thick, to this favor she must come." Norton Shakespeare Tragedies, Hamlet, 435, Act 5, Scene 1, lines 173 through 175. In Webster's tragedy, this motif may be intended to prepare us for the decidedly macabre turn the play will later take. Bozola is quite rough with the old lady, saying, quote unquote, "Though continually we bear about us a rotten and dead body, we delight to hide it in rich tissue. All our fear, nay, all our terror, is lest our physician should put us in the ground to be made sweet." Act 2, Scene 1, lines 56 through 60. There is, of course, the usual reference to venereal diseases when Bozola refers to, quote unquote, "you whose sin of your youth is the very patrimony of the physician." Act 2, Scene 1, lines 40 through 41. On the whole, Bozola's exchange with the old lady allows him to describe an economy fueled by vanity, luxury, disease, and the denial of death. As Ferdinand's spy, Bozola has noted physical changes in the Duchess, and he wants to verify the obvious possibility that she might be pregnant. His device? Apricots. After his edgy conversation with Antonio is over, he says in soliloquy, quote unquote, "I have bought some apricots, the first our spring yields." Act 2, Scene 1, lines 71 through 72. His plan is simply to offer her some of these fruits and see how they affect her. Since they're unripe, apparently they may, and do in this instance, cause stomach upset and induce early labor. This leaves Antonio and Delio to deal with the resultant emergency. Time is of the essence. Bozola has found it easy to discover the Duchess's predicament because he understands how susceptible princes are to their private desires. He says to Antonio, quote unquote, "Some would think the souls of princes were brought forth by some more weighty cause than those of meaner persons. They are deceived. There's the same hand to them. The like passions sway them." Act 2, Scene 1, lines 102 through 105. It's appropriate to recall what Ernest Hemingway said about F. Scott Fitzgerald's insistence in his early story, The Rich Boy, that the very wealthy, quote unquote, "are different from you and me." In his short story, The Snows of Kilimanjaro, Hemingway writes, quote unquote, "Yes, they have more money." Just before the Duchess becomes ill, she and Bozola bandy words over the metaphor of grafting. This common metaphor is worth attending to. Grafting, in husbandry, implies the splicing together of two different kinds of plant to produce new fruit. Under the management of a wise gardener, the results can be excellent, but the implication here, the mingling of the merely respectable steward Antonio with the royal Duchess, is that the fruit will not be worthwhile, or at least, not optimal. Act 2, Scene 2. "Sir, you are the happy father of a son." The Duchess gives birth to a son by Antonio. By Act 2, Scene 2, Bozola is certain that his suspicions are true. The Duchess's, quote-unquote, "tetchiness and most vulturous eating of the apricots are apparent signs of breeding." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 1 through 2. More witty and somewhat obscene bantering with the old lady follows. She calls him out on his abusive attitude towards women, but her criticism has no real effect upon him, as he responds with more banter. Quote unquote, "If we have the same golden showers that rained in the time of Jupiter the Thunderer, you have the same Danais still to hold up their laps to receive them." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 17 through 19. In any case, the Duchess and Antonio soon have their first child together, a son, as Cariola announces. Act 2, Scene 2, line 79. Act 2, Scene 3. The great are like the base, nay, they are the same, when they seek shameful ways to avoid shame. Bozola knows that the Duchess and Antonio have a newborn son, and makes it his mission to find out who the father is. In Act 2, Scene 3, while Bozola knows about the birth of the Duchess's child, he doesn't yet know who the father is, so his next moves will be directed towards nailing down that information. Antonio strongly insinuates to Bozola's face that he fears the latter man has poisoned the Duchess. Quote unquote, "You gave the Duchess apricots today. Pray heaven they were not poisoned." Act 2, Scene 3, lines 31 through 32. In return, Bozola impugns Antonio's integrity as a steward. Antonio refuses to allow Bozola to enter the Duchess's quarters until, he says, the man has shown himself to be innocent of poisoning her. Antonio cites to Bozola a proverb, quote unquote, "The great are like the base. Nay, they are the same when they seek shameful ways to avoid shame." Act 2, Scene 3, lines 53 through 54. As soon as Antonio is gone, Bozola picks up a piece of paper that Antonio dropped on his way out. It turns out to be evidence of, quote unquote, "a child's nativity calculated." Act 2, Scene 3, line 57. Bozola surmises that Antonio must be a go-between for the Duchess and whoever the father is. To find out the man will be his next mission. Bozola learns, too, how he is to be imprisoned on suspicion of poisoning the Duchess to hide the truth of her lying-in period. All the same, Bozola is delighted at having discovered an extremely valuable piece of information for his employer, Ferdinand. Characteristically, we see Bozola's mixed motives here, too, since he knows the information will hardly bring happiness to Ferdinand or the Cardinal. His intelligence will, he says, quote unquote, "make her brother's galls o'erflow their livers." Act 2, Scene 3, lines 76 through 77. At this point, Bozola, always an interesting character, seems entirely wrapped up in his role as a spy for Ferdinand and the Cardinal. There is little affect in his words and reactions, other than a self-satisfied chuckle, perhaps, when his suppositions turn out to be true. It is part of this character's complexity that his reactions and language will change as the plot becomes more violent and depraved. Act 2, Scene 4. Thou art my best of wishes. The Cardinal dallies with his lovely mistress Julia, who is married to Castruccio. In Act 2, Scene 4, the Cardinal shows his true colors, and there's something other than the pure, beautiful splash of red in the traditional religious garb a cardinal wears. We see and hear him interacting with his adulterous mistress, Julia, who is married to one Castruccio. Their conversation opens with what sounds like sincere admiration on the Cardinal's part for Julia's cleverness. Quote unquote. "Sit, thou art my best of wishes. Prithee, tell me, what trick didst thou invent to come to Rome without thy husband?" Act 2, Scene 4, lines 1 through 3. What follows is a witty, possibly mock misogynistic exchange in which, among other things, the Cardinal says that to find a woman who remains true, we would need to borrow Galileo's telescope and study the moon. Act 2, Scene 4, lines 17 through 20. We may be reminded of John Donne's ungenerous lines in Song, "Go and Catch a Falling Star," to the effect that his experience-seeking addressee should return from his travels, quote-unquote, and swear nowhere lives a woman true and fair. But Delio informs Julia that her husband has come to Rome, and a bit later, a servant says Castruccio has brought to Rome a letter that has all but deranged Ferdinand. As Bozzolo indicated at the end of Act 2, Scene 3, this was the horoscope that had been calculated for the child about to be born. Alone, Delio fears that, quote-unquote, Antonio is betrayed. Act 2, Scene 4, Line 82. The overall effect of Act 2, Scene 4, is to place the cardinal in a bad light, as a man of the cloth who is enjoying his adulterous union with a beautiful young woman. It seems a tribute to Webster's handling of his female protagonist in The Duchess of Malfi that he sets up the cardinal this way, neatly undermining the unkind things this not particularly holy man of the church says about his sister, the Duchess. After all, she isn't committing adultery. She is remarrying, even if below her exalted station. But that is not a crime. It's a choice she has the right to make. Act 2, Scene 5. I'll find scorpions to string my whips and fix her in a general eclipse. Ferdinand begins to show signs of instability when he learns that the Duchess has deceived him. In Act 2, Scene 5, we soon find out just how true Bozzola's supposition about the import of his discovery is when Ferdinand speaks so wildly that the cardinal must try to calm him down. It's true that the cardinal is himself upset, saying, quote-unquote, "Shall our blood, the royal blood of Aragon and Castile, be thus attainted?" Act 2, Scene 5, Lines 23 through 25. But the violence of Ferdinand's imagination is shocking and characteristic of Webster's style. Once again, the playwright apparently aims to undermine much or all of what Ferdinand says about the Duchess, and of course to condemn what he will do to her later in the play. Webster's handling of the Duke here brings out a certain tortured, overdetermined quality to his raving. Among other things, he pronounces this gem, quote-unquote, "Till I know who leaps my sister, I'll not stir. That known, I'll find scorpions to string my whips and fix her in a general eclipse." Act 2, Scene 5, Lines 77 through 79. Would Ferdinand become so agitated if all he wanted was property? He is already a privileged man. Perhaps incestuous jealousy for his twin sister lies at the bottom of his fury. He admits as much, worrying, as he says, that, quote-unquote, "my imagination will carry me to see her in the shameful act of sin." Act 2, Scene 5, Lines 40 through 41. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Monday, July 14th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025, by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations from Webster's The Duchess of Malfi, I have relied on the Methuen New Mermaids 5th edition, 2021.